It's Wednesday, August 17th. The Federal Conservative Party sent an email to the widow of an asbestos worker in Quebec, demanding she stop using the party's logo to protest the government's continued export of asbestos. Currently, the Tories call it a decease and persist strategy. This is The Current.
Good morning, and welcome to the summer edition of The Current. I'm Jim Brown. A banned Iranian terrorist group has been mounting a persistent and expensive lobbying campaign in both Canada and the United States to have its ban lifted. The Mujahideen Ikhalq has a violent past. Some describe the group as an authoritarian cult, but the group has its supporters, including high-profile current and former politicians on both sides of the border, who see in it a possible instrument of regime change in Iran. This morning, I'll speak with a journalist who has written about the group and to a Canadian politician who attended a rally in Paris at the group's expense. Later, I'll talk to the author of a new book about feathers, something he calls a natural miracle. That's coming up. But first, fighting the terrorist label.
It was a large, violent assault. Between 35 and 40 people brandishing bats, sticks, and a sledgehammer forced their way into the unguarded embassy, setting fires, breaking glass, and confronting staff. The parallel attacks in other cities were similar. In European and Nordic countries, firebomb assaults and occupations. At the Iranian mission at the United Nations, a hostage taking. Responsibility for some of the other incidents, which included the ransacking of Iran's embassy in Germany and a car bomb attack in Stockholm, has been claimed by the Mujahideen, Iranians opposed to the Tehran regime.
That was part of a CBC News report on the excitement of April 5, 1992. A large group of Iranians attacked the Iranian embassy in Ottawa. No one was seriously hurt, but the place was ransacked. The attacks were claimed by the Mujahideen Ikhalq, or MEK, as it's often called. The MEK is on the list of terrorist groups in both Canada and the United States. Ottawa reviewed the group's status in December, but Public Safety Canada decided the MEK should remain on the list. Not surprisingly, the MEK is not happy with that status. It's mounted an intensive lobbying effort aimed at politicians in Canada and the U.S. The group status is up for review in Washington, and a decision is imminent. We're joined now by Elizabeth Rubin. She's a contributing writer at the New York Times Magazine and has investigated the MEK and its activities. And she joins us now from Brooklyn, New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you have written about the MEK. What is this organization all about?
Well, the organization was founded as an opposition group to the Shah, you know, and it was at the time of revolution against the Shah in Iran. They were one of the main organized groups, and they were filled with young intellectuals. And what happened is that when Khomeini came to power, Masoud Rajavi was marginalized and eventually went into exile in 81.
This is one of the leaders of the MEK.
Exactly.
Yes.
Not before having taken part in the takeover of the U.S. embassy. They did not want to release the American hostages, and they killed about 7 Americans, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a falling out, the Rajavis and Masoud Rajavi and the MEK, they had a falling out with Khomeini, and they left for France in 1981.
So the terrorist designation, was that as a result of killing the Americans during
No.
No? What was it a result of?
The designation came in, I believe it was 1997 under the Clinton administration. And it may have been before, but that's the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, in part, it was a goodwill measure towards Khatami, the Iranian leader at the time. They were trying to make sort of diplomatic relations. There were attempts at diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Iran. And the MEK had continued its terrorist activities over the years against Iranian targets, as you've just heard, in 92 and At other times inside of Iran. They also joined with Saddam against Iran. These are Iranians who joined forces with Saddam because they went to live in Iraq in 1986.
Mm-hmm. So they fought with Saddam Hussein against people from their own country.
Exactly.
Tell us about the group's leadership. Who are they, the husband and wife who run the MEK?
Well, Massoud fell in love with this woman who happened to be the wife of his colleague. So he orchestrated a sort of ideological divorce. And this was Mariam Rajavi, who is now the leader that you see today, because Massoud is in hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And he orchestrated this enormous, what was called a cultural revolution. She gets divorced, marries him. They become the only couple that can be married in the MEK. Everybody else had to divorce and become celibate. You weren't allowed to have friendships. You're not allowed to have sexual relations. You have to confess any emotional attachments every day and week and month. And all love and energy must be channeled through to Mariam and Massoud Rajavi.
Now, this sounds a lot more like a cult than a political organization.
It's both. It structures itself around Mariam and Massoud. It is all of the members have sort of oaths of fealty to them. And that's one of the things that's very disturbing about this group. It does function like a cult.
Now, you've been to its base, to Camp Ashraf in Iraq. What did you find there?
I went to visit them in 2003 when they were still armed. So there were a lot of tanks, a lot of young women working on the tanks. And the young women, I was taken around with minders. I was there on over several days. And the young women would come up to me and almost, you know, like robots would recite their transformation from insecure, suicidal girl in Iran to transformed, confident, capable girl under the tutelage of Mariam Rajavi.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird. You know, I would try to get them off program. They'd go back on program. They took me all over the place. It was a lovely place. They grew their own vegetables, their own flowers. They played music. You felt like you were, you know, meeting the Stepford Wives.
So those are the ones who are still in the base. What about the ones that have managed to get out of the base? What are former members saying?
The former members, I met some, for example, who had escaped during the American bombing to the north, to Kurdistan. And these were people who had been told that they'd been sold a bunch of lies. They were refugees, some of them. Very poor, homeless in Turkey or in Europe. They get picked up by the MEK and told they'll get a salary, a wife, a home, and they'll be fighting the hated Iranian regime. Well, they get to Camp Ashraf in Iraq, and they're not only not given a salary, they're not allowed to have a girlfriend, they're not allowed to have friendships, they are in prison. And they described the cult-like aspects of it. Others who live in Germany described Massoud's, you know, that they got turned off by Massoud's alliance with Saddam against his own people, the way they were forced to kill the Kurds during the uprising of 1991, in which Saddam committed acts of genocide against the Kurds, mm-hmm. and used the MEK alongside them. So a lot of the people who've escaped are completely disillusioned with the group.
How viable is the MEK as an opposition force to the ruling Ayatollahs in Iran?
It's not viable. The majority of people in Iran who remember them despise them. I mean, the Baha'is, who are probably the most persecuted minority in Iran, have been polled and said, we would rather this current Iranian regime than the MEK.
They'd rather the Ayatollah stay in place.
That's right, than the MEK. People who remember them say, had the Rajavis had a chance, they would have become the Pol Pot of Iran.
Now, the Christian Science Monitor has a long list of people who've received speaking fees on behalf of the MEK, and it includes former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, the former Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean, the former Secretary of Homeland Security Tom Ridge. I mean, we've got influential names here, bipartisan names. Why do you think they've done what they've done?
It's absolutely shocking, to be honest. And I feel they should be ashamed. I mean, I've called a few of them. I spoke to former National Security Advisor James Jones. I spoke to former Congressman Lee Hamilton of the Hamilton-Baker Report, mm-hmm. General Wesley Clark. And when I asked them, do you know how this group treats its own members? Do you know it's considered a totalitarian cult? Do you know how Iranians view them? Their answer was, no, I didn't know. So either they are accepting money from a group without doing their research, which is shocking, or they're lying. And in either case, it's incredible that they're being used this way to speak out on behalf of a group that they should be ashamed of. Now, I understand there's an ideology or there's a thinking, you know, well, the enemy, my enemy, who cares? But the fact is that we have done this so many times in the U.S. that you'd think by now we would learn a lesson, and particularly these people.
Now, the political wing of the MEK, the National Council of Resistance of Iran, issued a strong condemnation of that piece that you wrote about the MEK in the New York Times. Were you surprised when you read that?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
If I remember correctly, it said you were in the thrall of the pro-Tehran lobby inside the Beltway.
I've never met the pro-Tehran lobby inside the Beltway. I live in Brooklyn. So I don't know who they're talking about. I haven't been to Iran since 2007. I have no relationship with the Iranian regime. In fact, look at what they're doing to democracy activists. I mean, it's ridiculous. They have not only done that, they've called me terrible things on the internet. They are an awful group, and they go after they threaten Iranians who try to say things against them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're a very powerful lobby group, and it's very interesting to try to find out where all their money is coming from. I don't have the answer, but they have millions and millions of dollars now.
Elizabeth Rubin, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Rubin is with the New York Times Magazine, and she joined us from Brooklyn, New York. Now, the MEK, as Elizabeth just said, spends a lot of cash lobbying in the U.S., tens of thousands of dollars on speaker fees at million-dollar conferences. The group's efforts here in Canada have been more subdued, but it has sponsored trips for Canadian members of Parliament to attend its annual rally in Paris. Our next guest, Carolyn Bennett, is an MP who's attended one of those rallies, and Carolyn Bennett joins me in the studio in Toronto now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you just finished listening to Elizabeth Rubin talking about the MEK. How do you respond to what she said?
Well, I think that Alan Gerson summed it up in his Huffington Post piece this week, saying that journalists considering a story accusing an organization of being a terrorist entity can hardly afford to turn a blind eye on the consequence of what they write, especially when the lives of thousands of individuals may be endangered. And I would hope that she, like I did, watched the full testimony on July 7th of the Congress special committee that was looking into the massacre at Camp Ashraf, where 34 people died, all 3,400 are at risk, and the generals that had been there, the physicians that had been there, so worried about what will happen when the U.S. forces pull out, and that as long as these people stay on this list as terrorists, that they will be victims to Maliki's government, be able to be attacked again.
So this is a concern over the people who are still living at the MEK base in Iraq now that there's a new regime in place in Baghdad. Concern that there will be forced resettlement, or I guess a bulldozing of the camp at Ashraf.
And I think that's why 600 parliamentarians show up, why 30 countries have decided to support this delisting of MEK as a terrorist organization, that Lord Corbett led the charge in the UK, the EU has delisted them, and now the hearing in Washington, the executive branch lost a court case in Washington. They now have the legislative branch pushing them hard, and we hope that Secretary Clinton will do the right thing and take these people off the list.
Well, let's talk a bit about the past, though, a little bit about the history of the MEK and your involvement in this Paris rally. Why did you go to Paris in 2008? Who made the approach?
I was approached by some of the Canadians, a Canadian high school teacher who's very worried about what is happening in Camp Ashraf.
Mm-hmm.
I was also then asked to join as well because of Raymond Falco and some of my colleagues who'd been very involved in this for a very long time.
Raymond Falco is a former Liberal MP from the Montreal area.
There were members from the Bloc, members from the NDP, members of the Conservative Party had been in previous years. That particular year, they pulled out at the last minute. I think that, and I guess the issue is that that we as parliamentarians have to take occasionally tough decisions. You weigh the information, and we know that numbers matter, and that when if you can get 600 parliamentarians from across the world there on a stage being able to say this has to stop.
But how much research? I mean, when you get an invitation like this, before accepting it, how much research did you do? How much did you look into the past and in the history of the MEK?
I think I did my own personal due diligence. I mean, you don't really want to get on a plane and stay in an airport hotel and race back for a gay pride parade in 72 hours. That's not exactly the way that members of parliament want to spend their time. You know that now any trip that's paid for is under scrutiny, and that we hope that people understand sunlight is the greatest disinfectant. People know that you've had your trip paid for, and that needs to be and ought to be scrutinized. But I think that in reading what Lord Corbett had been doing, being very worried about the inhabitants of Camp Ashraf, it seemed the right thing to do, in that numbers matter in these things, and when good people do nothing, people suffer. And certainly yesterday afternoon, watching the congressional hearings, it really, you know, you just feel that we as parliamentarians can't be doing enough to actually make sure that these people are taken off the list. Every single, even the detractors in those hearings, said that the dissidents there in Camp Ashraf are at risk. They must be moved, and that the first step, all of them said, is to get MEK off the terrorist list.
I'd like to just play you a short clip about the MEK. This is Jamal Abdi. He's the policy director for the National Iranian American Council, which is a non-aligned Iranian American advocacy group based in Washington.
This isn't a democratic organization. It has the structure of a paramilitary cult, essentially. They have very marginal support, if any at all. I mean, they're widely discredited because of their alignment with Saddam, because of their terrorist acts. So within Iran, it's actually highly discredited, and the Iranian government actually seizes on that to use MEK to try to discredit the indigenous democratic opposition.
Now, Carolyn Bennett, a lot of the supporters of MEK have been pointing to them as a viable alternative in Tehran. Do you see them that way as well?
Well, I think that what we're saying is that we want an election. We want a democratic approach, and that MEK would be one of the options. The Green Movement on the ground. There are a number of the Green Movement, I understand from the testimony in Congress in July, has accepted Madam Rajavi as well. You know, there's debate about that. But what we want is the sort of wrongfully accused. These people have had on the testimony, even Ray Takye, who was the critic of MEK at the hearings, had to admit that he is not aware of any terrorism over the last decade. And that we actually do have to, and that he believes that the people in Camp Ashraf are at serious risk.
Now, you argue that MEK should be taken off the list of terrorist organizations in this country. The Canadian government reviewed MEK's status back in December and decided to keep the group on the list. Was that wrong?
Well, I believe that looking at the due diligence of a number of countries, seven courts in the UK, the EU, have all made a different decision. And I think that hearing Colonel Morsch, McCaskey in the testimony, who were the supervisors there at Camp Ashraf, both in terms of protection but also as a physician, that they say MEK is no terrorist organization. Each of them very, very clear about this, and they believe that its designation as a terrorist organization really puts these people at risk.
Now, we're almost out of time, but what would you say to people who would say that you've got some bias in this because they paid for your trip to Paris and they put you up and they paid for you and I believe one of your sons to attend the conference? So how do you answer the claim of bias?
It is always the case, and that whether as parliamentarians, I wish that as parliamentarians that we could have much more travel in terms of subcommittees and the way that the American Congressional Subcommittee was able to go. They were denied access to Camp Ashraf, but there's no question that meeting personally with people like Lord Corbett and credible people actually does persuade you that there is due diligence being done. But hopefully people understand on any trip that a parliamentarian takes that it is absolutely clear with the clerk who paid for the trip, and then they have to decide how I made up my mind.
We are right out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Carolyn Bennett is a Liberal Member of Parliament for the riding of St. Paul's in Toronto. Carolyn Bennett is not the only Canadian parliamentarian who has met the MEK close up. In 2006, Immigration Minister Jason Kenney, who was then Parliamentary Secretary to Prime Minister Stephen Harper, spoke at a rally in Ottawa organized by an MEK-controlled group. Mr. Kenney later said he had no idea there was any such connection. Now, we requested an interview with Minister Kenney, but received no response. We also put in a request to the National Council of Resistance of Iran, MEK's political wing, to provide a spokesperson to appear on our program. And so far, that request has not been answered. Coming up in our next half hour, I'm going to talk to the author of a new book about the ancient history of feathers and why feathers still tickle us today. I'm Jim Brown. You're listening to the summer edition of The Current.